Welcome to Get It Done Entrepreneurs, where we talk with founders of companies who bet on themselves and won. My name is Rich LeBrun, and I am the founder and CEO of LeBrun Advisory Group. You can find us at rlebrun.com. Our mission is to help our clients build wealth through business ownership. Stick around to the end of the show, and we'll reveal how you can be our next guest. Let me introduce you to our guest. Whitney has been on the show before a while ago, but she has some exciting news that we're going to talk about. But let me just give you a little bit of background on Whitney. It's Whitney Elkins Hutton. She is the Director of Investor Education at PassiveInvesting.com. Whitney's journey into real estate began in 2002 with both triumphs and setbacks, providing her with a unique perspective on the industry. Her story from a near loss on her second deal to becoming a partner in over $800 million of real estate is both inspiring and instructive. As the director of investor education at PassiveInvesting.com, which is a private equity firm specializing in multifamily, express car washes, self-storage, and real estate debt, and the founder of AshWealth.com, which is a wealth creation mentoring group, which Whitney started, Whitney has not only navigated the complexities of real estate, but also replicated the strategies used by the wealthy to achieve financial freedom. However, today's different. Today, we got an exciting news. Whitney's got a new book that just launched today. So this is live. Her new book is called Money for Tomorrow, A Sensible Guide to Building Wealth That Lasts. So we're going to talk a little bit about the real estate industry. We're going to talk a little bit about her book, and we're excited to have Whitney back on the show. So welcome to the show, Whitney.
Thank you so much, Rich. I'm happy to be here.
Yeah. Well, thanks. And thanks for letting us help promote your book. That's going to be an exciting thing. But what's been going on with you? It's been, 6 months or so since we've talked last time. And what's going on with you in the real estate industry? You know, we had this high interest rates, inflation, and all those things that real estate people love. Okay. Were you able to find deals, get transactions done? Were you out there just, you know, tearing up the industry, or are you kind of sitting on the sidelines waiting for all this stuff, the dust to settle? What's been going on?
Well, yeah, both actually. I would say transactions, especially in my personal portfolio, have been a little bit slower than they have in previous years. But I've continued to deploy capital into other areas that are still abide by the 7 pillars of wealth. And I'm trying to get as many pillars locked in as possible, into assets that preserve capital, that create cash flow. Equity has been a little bit hard to come by right now, a little bit more challenging. If I can get tax benefits, fantastic. That's always great. Trying to get paid as many ways as possible with my investments, but, really staying focused on, investing with high quality operators in this, challenging market. And I think, that's one of the things that we've seen over the last 12 to 24 months is just how many operators were not prepared. I don't think anybody was 100% prepared for this, type of interest rate environment, but how many people, operators were really, taking some, gambling risks that things would never change. And so anyways, we just continue to work my husband and I, we just continue to work our blueprint, our investing plan. And, it's slow, it's boring, but, it's going to get us across the finish line for sure.
Are you seeing any certain product type that's more attractive today?
Yeah, I think there's, the market has shifted. I think, especially in the multifamily arena, I think this is a great time to be on the debt side of things, residential housing as well. That's what's been being rewarded in this type of market. Banks have pulled back a little bit with how much capital they're deploying into what type of assets they're deploying that capital. And that really leaves a nice space for the private investor to stand, step into and help solve problems and be rewarded for it. And so, I know for us here at PassiveInvesting.com, we're really focused on our residential real estate debt portfolio, our fix and flip loans that we do there. And then also, we do some other things in the background. We have another lending arm that we're excited to continue to develop and, possibly bring to our investors here In the next, 6 to 12 months, I would imagine. We also have our Alliance Fund, and that is really focused on preferred equity type deals and really helping high quality operators in the multifamily space who have great deals navigate this environment. And we're really specifically looking at deals where all things told, the asset has great occupancy, vacancy is coming down, net operating income is increasing, it's a high quality B plus, A minus asset in markets that we would want to be in and possibly even take over ourselves if we have to. But it gives us a unique opportunity to partner with other operators and help them solve this problem, which is they need to possibly refinance into longer term debt. They need to place another cap, rate cap on their current debt. Or maybe they just need to infuse a little bit more capital in order to continue to run their business plan, because it's not all about the interest rates. Other things have happened, here. We've had a perfect storm, in a lot of jurisdictions, taxes have gone up by 30 to 100%. Insurance has gone up by 50 to 100% in some markets. And also, and construction costs have also inflated as well. And so, we have this perfect storm that's come together, and we really have an opportunity to step in here and help solve problems and, quite frankly, help protect, assets that investors are already invested in.
So is the single family, multifamily strong still? Because it's hard for those people to buy houses today, I understand the investor market came into heavily for quite a few years now into the single family home, buying up a lot of the product, which is now they have a new competitor that the home buyers never had before. We're underbuilt for housing. So is that going to be sustainable for a while? Those two single family and multifamily markets?
There's several things that, kind of create a tailwind in that space. One, we were undersupplied by, I think it was like 4.3, and I've seen all the way up to 6 million residential units. This isn't just homes, but also multifamily. And that was as of like 3 years ago, and that problem only continues to get worse. We aren't seeing the consolidation of households that we saw in 2008. So there are still plenty of renters, in this environment that are competing for the same houses. Same houses, same multifamily units. And so, on a macro scale, I think, residential and multifamily real estate are, definitely have, some tailwinds in this space that they can, benefit from. And there's other things that are interplaying here, onshoring of jobs back from China. There's all these other, macro trends. Now, on a micro level, this is very regional. We have to take care that some markets, and maybe a listener here is in a market and they're like, there are three places to rent for every renter that we have. There are other areas in the United States that are all very overbuilt, where the demand, supply outstrips the demand. And so, we have to take care that we can look at these things at a macro level. We can see these numbers of being undersupplied by 4.3 to 6 million homes in the United States, but we have to take care and look at it on the micro level. What's happening regionally? Is that supply demand balance? Where is that? And make sure as an investor that you are also looking at that alongside the operator you're investing with and making sure that you're putting yourself in a good market to continue to take advantage of those supply demand imbalances.
Do you prefer to be in the suburban markets, or do you like to be in some of the urban markets? Where do you generally like to look for?
Yeah, so we personally look at major metropolitan service areas, and we're looking at the secondary and even sometimes a tertiary market to those major metropolitan service areas. And so you're going to be able, it's going to be a little bit more affordable. The renter is going to be able to get a little bit more elbow room with their rental. We've also, done a couple of build-to-rent communities as well. One was, we're completing a build-to-rent, and the other one was an existing build-to-rent community. And so people are maybe they're a duplex and only sharing one wall, and they actually have a yard. And so we're seeing that type of trend, as being kind of a nice bridge between somebody who can't necessarily afford a single family house, but doesn't want, they have a larger family, they have a dog, they have, a few cars, and they don't want to be in a multi-family type facility. So, this, I think this is a nice little area to be kind of in the secondary, wealthy tertiary markets, and, get a little bit more elbow room with the investment, and also be able to serve a different type of tenant.
Yeah. How about geography? Are you, we have a lot of movement out of some of these big cities, Chicago, New York, California, some exiting going down there. I'm actually be in Florida right now for a winter. We got a lot of people moving into this state. Are you shifting geography?
Hey, we were never in those geographies to begin with, because, from a macro level, those trends have been in place for quite some time. We mainly focus, a business level at passiveinvesting.com, we mainly focus on the Southeast corridor of the United States, the Carolinas, Tennessee, Georgia, into Texas even. On a personal level, I love that area as well. I'll also invest in my home state, Colorado. There's some unique pockets here in Colorado that, are underserved with housing as well. So.
Very good. So do you like risk into your deals? Or are you more looking for the annuity?
Yes, both. So, I'm more of a balanced investor. I like looking for deals that, are not heavily weighted in any one arm or what I call pillar of wealth. And so I want to make sure first that my, capital is being preserved, that I'm going into an asset to where when I look at the business plan, I look at the operator running the business plan, I look at the market, jobs growing, incomes growing, crime and poverty coming down, that I'm putting myself in, I'm stacking the investing cards in my favor. And then I'm looking for deals to where, hopefully it cash flows in today's market. That gives me wiggle room to be competitive, in the market should I have to decrease rents, right? I'm not already putting myself in an upside down position. But I want to be, investing in assets where there's a clear business plan to grow the net operating income. And even if I don't need the income coming in, I can continue to pull that into my next investment. And then I look for assets to where I can, quite frankly, like pull the strings and increase the net operating income. Or even, in the case of express car washes, the expected gross income on the asset. That puts me, in better control on the valuation of that asset. And so, yeah, when you ask the question, which side of the pendulum am I swinging on or investing with? For me, in my phase of investing, I'm looking to still take advantage of both sides of those pillars. Now, I, work with many investors who are getting closer to retirement. And right now, they're very attracted to debt investments, debt instruments right now. And I completely understand. They're taking some chips off the table, eliminating some of the equity risk or the risk they have to take to get some of that equity growth. And they're moving more, into the lower parts of the capital stack, closer to the senior debt positions. And that's totally fine as well. It's kind of like asking a stock market investor, are you invested in stocks? Or are you invested in bonds? Any good investor should have a variation and diversification in their portfolio.
All right, I have to ask you, express car washes, they are popping up on every corner. It kind of reminds me of the public storage days, when it kind of came out of the ground and they were popping up everywhere. Hot commodity, right? These express car washes, and it seems that they're like building across the street from each other. What's happening in that market?
Well, I mean, it's a $33 billion and growing market. And, quite frankly, it's in its infancy of growth. If you consider the fact that 72% of the United States have like two or more cars per household. And so, these cars and people just aren't washing their cars in their front yard anymore. They can get, especially with an express car wash, they can get the marriage of convenience and high quality customer service. Kind of like, we can equate it to the Chick-fil-A of car washes, right? If you like Chick-fil-A, if not, pick your own favorite, like kind of like higher end fast food restaurant, right? Now you have to take care, right? It's just like anything else, you know, that you are investing in an asset, one, that you understand it, but two, it's location, 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 okay? You have to be in the right area, in the right submarket, in the right side of the street with the right traffic count coming by there. Mm-hmm. And so we're seeing this explosion of express car washes, I think, in the, you know, closer to the primary markets. For us, we're choosing not to compete with those operators. We take a very different approach, and we like looking at the tertiary markets. These are the markets where, you know, people are living, right? Secondary and tertiary markets. That's where the actual customer is. And we want to be in that path, that Saturday morning errand running path. You know, they can go to Target, Walmart, go to the grocery store, whatever, and they don't even have to leave the parking lot, and they can get their car washed too. And so, which is a very different model than what you're seeing probably pop up all over the place in the larger major metropolitan service areas.
Well, you know, people are keeping their cars longer. Cars are now an investment in themselves, the pricing of cars today.
Right.
And, yeah. And the car wash solved the problem. They came up with the membership model, you know, which is nice reoccurring revenue. So it doesn't surprise me, you know, that they're popping up, and I'm a user, I'm a member, you know. It just makes life a little bit easier just to drive through the car wash multiple times a month, especially when I'm back in Chicago.
We don't even have one. Where I live, we don't even have, like...
You don't have one?
Well, we have a full-service car wash, which I rarely will go to because I have to, you know, sit in a line with a, you know... You know, the tunnel's so short and it's so hands-on. I have to sit in line. I'm there for 30 minutes. You know, if there were an express car wash in Boulder, Colorado, guys... I would probably have a membership, right? So I hate washing cars. We have one
maybe
car.
Maybe one of our listeners has an appetite for that. They can hook up with you. All right, Whitney, that was fun on real estate. I love your knowledge and your breadth of knowledge, and that you're still active in the game. You know, real estate is always mobile and fluid, and you got to adjust and adapt. And you're doing really well at that. Let's talk about this book. It's been in the works for a while, because you and I talked a while ago. We're waiting for this magic date, and I'm really glad we get the actual date that it's being launched. So talk to us why you put the book together, a little bit about the journey, which you're hoping the outcome for the reader is of your book.
Yeah, so Money for Tomorrow, and we actually landed Bigger Pockets as the publisher, and, you know, I don't know if anybody's ever written a book before with an editor. Things are constantly changing up until the last minute. So the title is Money for Tomorrow, How to Build and Protect Generational Wealth. So this book, really, I started this book several years ago in documenting my own personal journey, wealth building journey, because I'm sitting here I'm digesting podcasts, reading books, I'm learning from mentors. And I wasn't able to find an actual, what you'd call, blueprint on, like, how to build wealth, in, you know, anywhere on the internet. You know, you had people's parts of their hypothesis. And I'm like, why isn't there just like one go-to resource? And I wanted to have a resource to pass down to my daughter, right? I hope to pass down a portfolio, a wealthy portfolio to her. But, you know, knowledge is just as important as the money. And even if I handed her the money, I wanted her to be able to be a good steward with those assets. And so I was like, I need to write a book for my daughter. And that's how it really started out, was an N of one. I had an audience of one. And then as I continued to coach, you know, people on their wealth and real estate journey, you know, I saw that, you know, most people were struggling to fortify their financial position. They didn't understand how to protect their money they were bringing in. They didn't understand the basic fundamentals and principles on how to grow it. And then for my investors that were closer to retirement and older, they had major holes in their estate planning and quite frankly, their training of the next generation. And so really I expanded this book. I brought it to my coaching audience and really expanded it to help fill these gaps, because, you know, I was teaching my daughter this and I was like, this should be the book we all should have learned from in high school, in college. And so that is what the book is. It's designed for somebody who's just starting off in real estate to go into, or any type of investing, to become the most formidable investor possible. You know, they can make money when the market goes up, down, or sideways. They understand how money works. They understand how the markets work. They understand just those basic principles that will help them build and protect their wealth. And then also for the more seasoned investor, this is an amazing, you know, resource for them to go back and just say, hey, do I have all my bases covered here? Am I moving into the next season of my life, next season of my investing career, not unafraid, you know, fully aware, fully knowledgeable, and unafraid of what could happen next.
So is it written in layman's terms?
As layman as you possibly could. Yes. So there's a lot of stories of my own personal journey in there. There's also 13 other investors that joined me on this path. So every chapter we're teaching a concept, and then you either hear from me on how that concept laid out in my investing career, or from another investor who put that concept into action. And so it's not just one person's viewpoint on how to build and scale wealth. I mean, there's 14 very seasoned investors, and not all of them are from real estate. And there are plenty of investors from, you know, businesses, from law to finance to tax law. There's a ton of viewpoints represented in this book. But the common theme is that these are the principles that you need to understand, that we all should understand, on how to build and protect our wealth.
Is it too late for somebody to read this and put into action, or is it's timeless? And wherever you are in your journey, from young to old, wealthy, or just some maybe starting out and building wealth, it works. It's a good book for everybody to read.
I believe so. You know, the actual narrator who read the book for Audible, thank goodness they didn't ask me. I talk way too fast for that. But the narrator who read it, I actually got an amazing, email from her last week. And you know, she's a little bit older. And anyways, long story, she just wrote out point by point all the things that she has done in response to, in learning from just reading this book, as part of her job. She was like, wait a second, I consider myself extremely financially knowledgeable, but I realized I had a bunch of holes. And, you know, that's all I could hope for. I mean, you know, somebody early in their career starting off, that's going to be their blueprint. Run the blueprint, right? You're going to learn more on top of that. You're going to make your own mistakes, but run the blueprint, get your financial foundation set. But again, somebody who's well advanced into their investing career, they can use it as a resource guide to make sure that they have all those holes plugged.
Yeah. So you've written it from education perspective, your own personal experience perspective, got some other investors kind of weighing in on this. So this is live information, tested, proven experiences down on paper, right? Sounds like an exciting book to read. I'm trying to figure out how I want to ask this question, but how did you start? Because, you know, I know you are today. You're very, very wise and astute in what you do. I know you had your journey. You kind of bought some real estate, and I think you had a tough time on your first deal. What set you on this path?
Oh, well, I think there's kind of a middle inflection point here that I think is very pivotal. And it's not a story that I tell often, but in about, my early part of my career, for, you know, people who don't know, I was living, flipping, and house hacking. You know, I was getting really good at building buckets of money, keeping that tax-free using the 121 exclusion, but I was really bad at building cash flow. So I was racking my brain. I'm like, I don't understand how people are retiring, and I want to retire. Like, I want to be work optional. And I was like, okay, maybe it's not real estate. Maybe it's not building my own business. Maybe I have to be the best stock market investor out there. And let me go learn that. And so I picked up the book Money Master the Game by Tony Robbins when it came out. What was it, 2014, 15? And that's when I realized, holy smoke, I have no clue on how money works. I have no clue on how the system is set up for us. I don't want to say against us, but really, we are trained to be a product of the financial system, not so much a player, an educated player in the financial system. And I was like, you know, if you can't figure out who the product is, you are, right? And that's when I realized, oh my gosh, I'm the product. Okay, I need the system set up in such a way that I had to rescue myself. That's really the big thing that, you know, came from, you know, out of that book is like, you know, my financial advisor isn't going to do that. My fiduciary that's over my 401k at my company that I work for, they're not going to do that. You know, my boss, like I can ask for all the pay raises I want and produce all the value I possibly can, but I'm going to be limited here. So I actually have to take the control and educate myself and take that move from financial education into what I call financial capacity. I have to learn how to take action here. And it's scary because, you know, when I grew up, definitely we were not educated to do that. We were educated, at least in my family, you know, you grow up, get a good job, get married, go to school, you know, have a family, right? That's the order of operations. And I was like, you know, things need to be very different. And I had to be willing, quite honestly, to make mistakes. And I think that fear of failure is what keeps a lot of people sidelined, which is again why I wrote the book, because there are certain mistakes that we just shouldn't fail at. Like we should have the knowledge and to sidestep these mistakes, make it less scary. Because, you know, as an investor, you know, we both know that there are going to be investments that just don't pan out, right? Let's save our fear for that.
Yeah, there's plenty of opportunities to learn out there for sure. But you brought up when you were doing the fix and flip type stuff, and I'm gonna use this analogy. There's making money and building wealth. Talk to our listeners about the difference. You said in fix and flips and home, you're making money, and not building wealth.
Oh,
so talk to our listeners about that.
Well, so it kind of goes back to the seven pillars of wealth that I talk about, and you know, I've introduced four here on the show. You know, I doing the fix and flips. I was starting using a asset like real estate. You know, my capital was preserved, but only for the short term. I was creating buckets of money, equity, but I wasn't able to take advantage of monthly cash flow. I wasn't able to take advantage of tax benefits. I wasn't really truly able to take full advantage of, you know, the capital preservation of the real estate asset because I was selling it. I was constantly getting rid of it and having to find a new asset. And that's, you know, and I think, you know, even with our jobs, I think we're more attuned to like the fast buck. And so I had to really figure out, okay, what is wealth? Okay. Wealth means I can do what I want, when I want, with whom I want. Okay. That's the definition of wealth. What do I need to have that? Is it just constantly grinding away, to, you know, earn the next $10, $20, $40, $50,000? Or does it mean I need to invest in a way where I have my time back? Right? If I'm going to do what I want, when I want, with whom I want, I actually have my time back. That means my money has to work for me. What does that look like? Well, that's when a friend of mine says, well, okay, if that's what the definition of wealth is, why don't you take those rentals or those fix and flips and keep one and put a renter in it? And I'm like, you know what? That's genius. I should do that. It was like the slap on the forehead, right? I had been renting, you know, for several years. I'm like, of course, that's how wealth is. And, you know, it starts off slow, right? You know, your 1, 2, 5 rentals probably isn't going to get you most people across the finish line. You need to figure out how to scale past that. And so we scaled through single family homes and then eventually got into larger multifamily deals. And then we realized we didn't have our time. So when you talk about wealth, what does true wealth mean? I scaled my income. I scaled my equity. I had assets backed by capital preservation. I had the tax benefits going, but I didn't have my time back. And that's the last piece of the puzzle that tumbled for us was learning how to invest in other people's deals so we could have our time back.
I love it. I love it. We have some good friends. I just always remember because they've been friends for probably about 35, 40 years. And they would just methodically buy something every 5 years. They started out buying, I think they bought a mobile home right from the beginning, rented it out. And then they went and bought a duplex and rented it out. And then they went and bought, you know, a couple of duplexes. And then they bought some multifamily. But every 5 years was their plan. And it was a beautiful thing to watch. And now they have tremendous wealth built, and they have all that freedom that you got done just explaining. Well, Whitney, this has been fun, and I want to help promote your book. But where can people find your book? Was it on Amazon? Should I say? Is that where it's at?
You can find it. The best place where you can get all the bells and whistles and bonuses that accompany the book. There's a series of 4 webinars that I've put together. So you can get the recordings of those webinars along with the book. It's at biggerpockets.com/moneyfortomorrow. It is on Amazon. It's on Barnes and Nobles. Totally fine if that's where you want to purchase. There's just the bonuses aren't there. So if somebody's really excited about the bonuses, check out biggerpockets.com/moneyfortomorrow.
Very good. We will put that in the show notes. I will help promote that to all our listeners around the country and around the world. Whitney, it's been fun. I'm excited, and I'm excited to read the book. And you definitely can use some more information along this line. Is there anything else you'd like to share with our listeners before we close out the show?
You know, if you're wanting to reach out to me and you want to learn more about what we do at passiveinvesting.com or more about what I do at ashwealth.com, you need help on your journey, reach out to me at passiveinvestingwithwhitney.com.
That's great. Well, thanks again for taking time out of your busy day to share your wisdom. I wish you much success in this new book. I'm sure it's going to be helpful to many, many people. And again, as I mentioned, we'll put this all in the show notes, which will be published in about next 2-3 weeks. Once we get this all edited, we'll put it out there on all podcast platforms. So Whitney, thanks again for coming on the show.
Thank you so much, Rich. It was such a pleasure.
Rich LeBrun here. Thank you so much for listening to our podcast, Get It Done Entrepreneurs. If you are a successful business owner who would like to be on this program, please visit us at rlebrun.com/podcast and fill out the form, and we will reach out to you. If you got something out of this interview, would you share this episode on social media? Just do a quick screenshot with your phone and text it to a friend or post it on the socials. If you know someone that would be a great guest, tag them on social media to let them know about the show and include the hashtag GetItDoneEntrepreneurs. I love seeing your posts and guest suggestions. We are regularly putting out new episodes and content. To make sure you don't miss any episodes, go ahead and subscribe. Your thumbs up, ratings, and reviews go a long way to help promote the show and mean a lot to me and my team. Want to know more? Go to our website, rlebrun.com, or follow me on LinkedIn, Facebook, and Instagram. Thanks for listening. We will see you next time.